I'm drinking cold water. I will be good soon, I promise. I won't melt down the whole episode, I don't think.
I really love your feelings. I feel like your feelings are a part of it.
Yeah, I know. I do too. I want them to be welcomed. This is why, this is why we do what we do. I want them to be. There are no podcasts that I know of where people, well, there are therapy podcasts where people do therapy anonymously with the therapist, but those are very niche and mostly only therapists listen to those or people in the psychology world. And I think parents should really be part of, I think more parents need to see the emotional side of the work, because I go on Reddit all the time and I see parents say like, I'm such an asshole to my kid. I want to be better. I want to be better. And you get the platitudes and yeah, it's hard sometimes, just use more boundaries or, be more consistent. Three's a hard age, but like, that's not what I'm here to kind of put out. So I want people to, I guess, witness somebody who like is a professional who's also struggling, because really it's not about Aaliyah. Like, I'm not crying over here because Aaliyah was an asshole to me, you know? So that's the intro.
Yeah, why are you crying, my friend? Why are you crying?
Well, I'm crying because it's my birthday. My brother died, and there's a profound grief that shows up in December for me because of my birthday on December 2nd. December 15th was my brother's birthday. He would be 41 this month. And there's a lot of loneliness, and then because I'm feeling so sad and in so much pain, I have this kid who's pulling on me, who's needs me and wants me to be the loving, calm, kind, connected person that I mostly am. Usually I do a lot of my grief in private. I work really hard too. I try to show up for her when I'm feeling things. I try to feel. I don't want to like suppress it and become like a robot, but I let her know like I'm feeling sad. I miss Uncle Russell. I didn't get enough sleep or whatever. It's not about you. It's never about you. But there are times that she is pulling on me and pulling on me and I can't get out to take a break and it's just all happening really fast and then I use words, language, or like a tone that I'm not okay with. And then my process is to beat myself up. So that's where I get really stuck and I have a really hard time. Like I can move through it after and come into connection with her quickly because I will apologize and then I'm like, you know what? I'm here again. Let's snuggle. Let's, and then she's good and we're good. But it takes me a very long time to forgive myself. And I've spoken to my best friend about this, and she has heard, like, I'll give her examples of how I speak to my kids. She's like, that's not even mean or harsh. What are you talking about? And I'm like, but it's not in alignment with how I want to show up. It's, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I'm, saying or because I'm never really like, I never yell. I never t call her names. I never threaten. I never like overtly shame, but I'm not in alignment. But when I'm triggered, like that's it. I'm under-resourced. I'm in deep pain. Like I'm not able to get there. And like that's my place that I get stuck. And that's why I'm crying.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, it's not just one piece, it's so many pieces all overlapping each other.
Yeah. Well, it's being a human being who is like flawed and in pain and having a kid who like this topic of like spirituality, right? Like I feel like there's something to be said about that like clash. Like we have this goal that is like massive and like it's like interconnected and it's humanity and it's like beautiful. And then there's like pain, fucking suffering, sadness, darkness. And like that is such a good metaphor for how like I live inside my head. I'm like beauty, sky, sun, little children, little frolicking beings. And then I'm like, fuck the world.
Totally.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
I think that's why all of the ancient Indian spiritual books are all war, ta war tales of war and battles, because it's a
Yeah.
reflection of what's happening inside of us all the time.
Totally. Totally.
And the good side is always outnumbered by like 10 million to one.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
not to take the focus off you, Kara, but like I think that what is painful for so many parents is wanting to do better, knowing you could do better, trying harder, and still getting triggered into the behaviors and watching yourself hurt your child and feeling so out of control. I think that is common experience. I mean, there's the parents who just do stuff unconsciously and they're not really working on themselves. And then there's the ones that are really working on themselves and watching themselves do things and knowing this isn't right. This doesn't feel good. I see I'm hurting my kid and feelings like they don't have the tools, they don't have the strength, they don't have, you know, it's just whatever. That's why we're doing this podcast. I feel lucky because Tori's at the age where she just busts me every single time I do it. That doesn't mean I can stop doing it though. But at least I know that she knows that it's my problem. That is the grace of this
That's
approach.
such a relief. Oh my God, I love that. I love hearing you say to her responses to you, like, "Mom, stop. You're being shaming. Leave me be." Thank God, you know, like, yeah, call me out, man. Call me in. But my kid, you know, I was crying to Ruthia earlier because I'm like, but she's a baby. She's two. And come on. And that's why it's worse, or it feels worse for me because I'm like, fuck, you're such an asshole. She's a baby. Don't be a dick to a baby, you idiot. No, it's really
Absolutely
hard.
always feels terrible on every age, at every age so far. Like, you know, you're always like, but they're four. And you're like, they're six. Wait, now they're, you know, you, because now I'm like, oh, she, my daughter's sense of self is very tender. So when I'm
Yeah, so true.
aiming, I feel so bad because she can barely hold her sense of self together.
Oh, guys, this is so hard.
And my daughter just texted me while you were crying, saying, "Can you read this over? I'm about to send this email." And I said, "I'll do it after the recording." And she knew I was recording. She said, "Tell them I said hi." Even after having to put her off like that, I was like, "Oh." You know,
Sorry, I'm
it's a
busy.
small thing. Most people would say, "Oh, you just set a boundary and you're recording and it makes sense." But oh, it hurts me. It hurts me that I put her off just now, you know. I also know that if it was a rush or something, she would tell me, and I kind of know that it's not. Because we've worked on that kind of stuff for many years. But even a little thing like that, little in quotes, little thing like that, I feel some grief around it. I probably wouldn't have even noticed it as clearly if it wasn't for you sharing what you're sharing just now, Kara. But yeah, you know, like we try, like you said, we try and be this beautiful, connected being. And I think it's a beautiful thing to have that goal. And as we develop, we see deeper and deeper levels of what's possible and what's available to us too. But it also, when the more we do that, the more we see our mistakes highlighted even more, and our out of alignment moments even more. So it's
And aware we get of what love feels like, the more painful and glaring it is when we're out of it.
don't like that at all.
No, it sucks.
I mean, the only thing that I, well, something I tell myself, I was telling you this before this, is that I think it's very good to make mistakes with our kids and then own them and then course correct and then show them feelings that are hard. I mean, I think it's so important to model being a human being and not a blank slate. We're not a blank slate. We're coming in with all our stuff. And it's so important for our kids to know that we have so much going on and that we're human because they have so much going on. They have such big feelings. That's, I think there's so many parents that hold, like, just try to be, I don't know, like neutral or just authoritarian without like a process. And I don't, I think that's, it's very unhelpful. I think we have to model pain too and how we're working with our pain.
I think that like the challenge is like, well, I don't want to hurt her. So I have to be calm and perfect. But you can't do it. You can't do that. Like for me, at least, it's not helpful. It's actually like that's the perfectionism that has harmed me for so long, to just like appear some way that is not how I feel. When I do that, my system like rejects it. It's like you're not gonna. It's like it gets angrier and like all that shit that lives inside me wants to come out, you know. And I think for women, it's really hard. The perfect mother myth is like so alive for me. She never cries, God forbid, you know, she can handle it all. She also works and she does everything. But the fact is like, that's not who I am. It's not who I am. I can't, that's not how I feel. Like, I feel things so deeply. So the more I try to suppress it to be that perfect mother, the worse I feel. But I don't want to hurt my kids. So like all those things are really hard. This value to be this non-coercive collaborative parent, I think it's a lot of like also pressure for me, but there's no other way for me. Like, it's not like I'm like, it's too much pressure, I'm going to go back or I'm going to do something else. It's like, I'm going to do it. And I told my husband once, he said, oh, I can't remember what we were talking about. Something about, you know, people who do it differently, people who control their kids and have like really firm rhythms or routines or whatever. I was saying about independent play. And I was like, we don't really do that. Like, we let her, you know, we're just with her. If she wants us, we're there. We don't have that time to ourselves that like some families get, you know, on the weekends or whatever. We're kind of always together. And sometimes it's a lot. And I was like saying to him, but I'm not going to do it different though. Like, I'm venting, I'm complaining, or I'm stressed, and I need you to hear that. But I'm also telling you, I'm not changing it.
Yeah.
And that's really hard. And I bet other parents who are listening, I hope other parents who are listening can relate to that.
Yeah, for sure. In the early days, I used to say, my ideology is clashing with my reality.
Yeah.
And when I would tell that to people, they would say, oh, so you're going to relax on your ideology. I said, no, that's not the point. That's not the point. My ideology is clear, but the practice of it is bloody, bloody hard. You know, it's bloody, bloody hard. Because, I mean, a large part of the reason is our society is not set up to support this mindset and this practice and this way of relating to each other, you know? And we have all these deep patterns wired into our nervous system, which cause us so much stress and so much distress.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to repress. And this is why I say no repression, no projection, right? I don't want to project my pain onto my kid in a way that causes them to fear me. But I also don't want to repress in a way that causes me to be not human. And because the more I repress, the more those layers build up and then they leak out even worse, right?
Totally.
And finding that balance is what I call the impossible balance. So finding that balance is super challenging. It's really a lifetime study and work to try and find that balance between being human and allowing myself the full range of my feelings. I totally used to, I totally, in my 20s, I was totally like, just choose to be happy, everyone. Just choose to be happy. Yeah. Well, you're sad. Just choose to be happy. You can just change your thoughts. And it was a very simplistic surface level understanding of humanity and being human and emotions, relationships and communication. And it didn't really work for me because I was lashing out at my kid all the time. And when I look at video, I mean, my kid's 27 now, right? Just got married. And when I look at videos from when she was like 3 and 4 and 5 and 10, I cringe. Even to this day, I watch them and like for years later after watching one of those videos, it haunts me, you know? And I'm like, how could you do that, Vivek? I'm still saying that to myself. So when you're in the middle of it, it's even more intense, right? Because the tornado is like, it's like swirling all around you at the same time. So there's no, it's chaos. Have you seen that video of me where I'm like, I got this, my kid is like really young and I got the huge beard and I'm like, I'm waving my arms around and I'm running at her like this and I'm yelling, you give me everything you got inside of you and I'll give you everything I've got inside of me because I love you. Have you seen that video?
I haven't seen that one.
Oh my God, I can't believe you haven't seen it. It's like no, literally a 4-second video. I'm going to share it with you. And but like you can see the wildness in my eyes at that time because I knew that I was rewriting such an ancient and well accepted pattern and it was so deep inside of me the pattern, and if I wasn't constantly doing this work, the pattern took hold. Even now it takes hold, you know, and a lot of the effort is so those patterns don't control us. And that's part of what the tears are for, you know, the tears and the angst that we feel around these things, I think is a beautiful part of our deep, deep desire to honor our kids. And I think your tears are really beautiful in that way because they demonstrate the heart that you have for this path.
Mm.
Parenting's hard, you don't know what to do. You're blaming your kids, but it's probably you. You love your kids and that you can trust. Just remember your kids don't suck.
Welcome to Your Kids Don't Suck, cultivating closeness with your children through non-coercive conscious parenting. We're your hosts, Kara Tedstone and Ruthia Lee. Let's dive in and grow together
So welcome back to Your Kids Don't Suck. And we are so grateful for every episode we get to record. It's such an honor because this topic, we're so passionate about it. We can't talk about it enough. And today we have Vivek Patel with us, and he is our dear friend and buddy and colleague, and we're all obsessed. We have a three-way WhatsApp group, the three of us, and we watch videos of people who are doing more traditional kinds of parenting. We're talking about, why doesn't this work? Why does this irk me so much? Why does this trigger me? We're like always breaking it down, and it's so joyful to get deeper and deeper into this approach, non-coercive collaborative parenting. And Vivek, we love you. We're so happy you're here again.
Thank you. I'm happy too. It's so wonderful. We started with such depth right off the bat. You know, it's so,
right?
So yeah. Powerful.
And so the topic for today, tell me if I have this right, you two. The spiritual path of parenting, and particularly this approach, this non-authoritarian approach where we see our children as equal in value and we honor them as whole people. Why is that a spiritual path? And we're going to each sort of weigh in on that. Also, Vivek, you wrote this thing that says, I saw my child as a divine master who came here to teach me about myself. And that your one-liner is, I learned to love by emulating my child's love. Mm. I want to hear more about that.
Mm. Yeah, you know, when my kid was born, and I was right there, thankfully, and my wife gave one last push, and she kind of flew out and bounced on the table. The doctors missed her, and she kind of bounced on the table. And I shooed all the doctors away, and I looked right into her eyes, and I got really close, and I held her, and I said, I love you, 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 for like 30 seconds, and then they all shoved me away and put the kid on mom's chest. But that was my first experience with her. And the first thing that she said to me, because I could hear her psychically in my head, she said, she looked right back at me, because we had this moment, really, really two consciousnesses fully aware of each other in that moment. And she looked back at me and said, Dad, if you treat me like most parents treat their kids, I'm going to hate you when I'm a teenager. And I felt it, and I said, noted, thank you. And she was my teacher right from that moment, the moment she popped out. Before, really, also, because we were in communication before that as well, in our hearts and in our consciousness and in our meditation. And I used to meditate on my wife's belly all the time. And the three of us would meditate together when she was in utero. But that sense of her deep wisdom, it hit me like so hard. I was like, this young being knows, she knows her consciousness. She doesn't have all the layers, all the labels, all the ideas, all the pain. She has some pain because it's even just being born is a shock, you know, coming out all of a sudden. You're a water creature. You don't have to breathe. You don't have to eat. Sound is muffled. There's light is very whatever. Then all of a sudden there's light and there's breathing and the shock and everything. It's like it's a big transition all of a sudden. But still, when I'm with a baby, and I have a chance to interact with a baby, or a young one, I always ask them, tell me what it's like where you just came from, because I don't remember and you do. And the little ones always, they always feel it. They always feel it. They always feel my deep respect. and parents are always a little bit surprised when I have a chance to interact with their kid. They say, hey, you want to say hi to the baby, and they give me the baby because that's what parents do. And then I say that to the kid and I'm really tuned in, and the kid just like focuses on me, and we have this deep response, you know? And I really mean it. Like, I really do learn that from them, even though they're not saying anything to me. I really do learn that from them, because for me, so much of my life is getting back to my original consciousness. That's why I meditate, and it's why I try and be as loving a being as I can, because I feel like that loving vibration leads me closer to my truth. And so my kid, being already connected to that pre-labeled consciousness, the unchanging, what I call the unchanging consciousness, I was like, I want to learn that. I want to know that. Where is that? Where is that in me? And every time we would interact, I would let that absorb into me. And at the same time, it was a mutual thing because I was like that with her. She was really excited to learn what I knew about life too, because I had 28 years at the time. I'm going to be 56 soon, but I had 28 years at the time of mistakes that I had reflected on and learned something about life. And I really wanted to pass that on to her. And so we had this deep mutual, still have, but we had this from the very, very beginning, we had this deep mutual connection with each other. So that's when I say I learned to love by emulating my child's love, I really felt the pure love of the infinite flowing through her eyes and flowing through her actions. Even when she was like hitting or screaming or scratching or throwing or all the things that parents tend to complain about, I never allowed myself to veer from seeing her that way. And we were just talking about how even with that, I would still like treat her terribly because so much of the time, because of my patterns. But I never believed in that. I always would like you said, Kara, like even when I'm like that, I still know that I'm still going this path and I'm going to come back to my center again. Eventually I'm going to come back to my center and we're going on again. You know, that sense of her being an infinite being and her infinite consciousness connected to every point in the universe simultaneously and all of the universe's power inside of her shining like a light to me. That sense of her infinite power helped me when I would harm her, because I knew that also she's a child, but also she's an infinite being with infinite power. And this is part of her path. She's here with me because that's where we were supposed to be. We were supposed to be together, to travel this journey together, to learn about life together, and to figure out what it's all about together. Yeah. And she came to this triggered, messed up Vivek for a reason, right? And I came to her for a reason. And so even when my messed up nonsense would harm her, I would remind myself of that path. You know, yes, she's a child, but also she's infinite. Does that mean I'm also infinite? Yeah, I guess it does. I guess it does.
Yeah, I just noticed that like we talk about our children with so much love and respect. I think that is unusual. I think a lot of parents have so much judgment towards their children, which is so sad. And that's all the projection that we talk about a lot in this work. That's why we do this work.
It's hard to humanize our children if we're not also on the path of humanizing ourselves.
It's easy also to fall into the victimized place where you're like, my kid is so difficult and, you know, they have all these needs and like, I need time for myself. And I do still get stuck sometimes in those thoughts, but going back to my child is my spiritual teacher. Like my child's my spiritual teacher. Like she is here to guide me out of that. So where has that gotten me? Where has that thinking gotten me? I mean, I've done it all my life. Like, as far as I can remember, like, think shit so hard. Why me? You know, this is, I'm so stuck. Like, it's like the prison of my own, you know, of my own experiences. And my kid is actually, I see it. I see that my kid is actually forcing me out of that. And
well,
also,
they force you into it.
Yeah.
I think our children force us into our wounded places.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so difficult. And then we have to figure out how we're going to work with that.
Yeah. And like the non-coercive collaborative approach is like, if you see it that way, the only way to connect with your kid is to not do that, to not use coercion to stay there in the victimized place where you're like, well, my kid's so needy, I need to control her more. She needs to learn that, like, I'm not going to show up in these ways. Just because she cries doesn't mean I'm going to change my behavior. That would be, you know, the traditional sort of way of thinking about it would be like, well, you know, we've got to teach our kids that they can't get what they want because we're adults and we have things to do.
Otherwise, they'll be entitled. And then also,
because that's not the way the world works, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
But like the way that I see it with this mindset, I'm like in that place and I'm like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is like what I need to shift. Like internally, I need to shift. So like, you know, my kid is there, like this like actual being that is like, pulling me into this new whole way of thinking things. Like she's actually pulling me out of these like rigid stuck places that I get to. But like I'm not saying but it's so hard. It's like you're still operating in it. You know, you're still in the pattern. You're watching yourself do it. But with this mindset, I can go back into it, you know, and do better. And again, fuck up and do better. It's like the landing place.
I really want to tell you guys the story because I feel like it's illustrating what you're both saying of something with Tori that happened with me yesterday. Okay, so just for the listeners, my daughter has homeschooled her whole life, and then she decided she wanted to go to school in 7th grade. And so 3 months ago, she started school for the first time in her life. And we've always been together all the time. Like even though I have a job, I see clients a lot of times virtually, and then I hang out with her, and she's just like, and then I spend time with her in the afternoons. And anyway, I'm just always with her, and now I'm not. Okay, now she's at school for the first time. It's been so challenging and triggering. And one thing that's been a really deep trigger the whole time is that now I don't know what the hell she's doing. I don't know what she's learning. I don't know what she's experiencing all day, every day. I don't know what people are saying to her. I don't know what feelings she's having. I don't know. I mean, it is like it's been like torture for me. It's been, and there's been some really. And the other thing is that I feel like she's not telling me things. So that's new. Like I usually know everything. Also, I know all her friends because they come over. I know them all. Now she's all these friends, literally like 10 friends, and I don't even know them at all. I don't know what they're like. I don't know what their influence is. Oh my God, just talking about it makes me sweat. And so it's been a really big trigger that if I don't know what's going on, she's not safe, I'm not safe, I'm failing her. She's not processing with me. That means I did something wrong. You know, if I did it right, she would come tell me everything. She'd confide in me. Blah, blah. And then I get little glimpses of things that are going on, and I'm like, why didn't you tell me that? Like, that's my response to everything. She'll tell me something about like her friend told her this really hard thing in her life, and she's the only one that she told. Like, Tori's the only person that this friend is telling these really hard things about her family life to. And I'm like, honey, you've been holding this for like a month. Like, I can help you. You know, like I get all worked up about the fact that I don't know what's going on. And so yesterday I was having a very painful day. But I'm in practice of praying a lot lately and just asking the universe for help. So I had a lot of prayer all day yesterday because Tori was also really in a bad mood and really pushing me away. And then that sends me over the edge, like when I can't reach her. Anyway, I just did a lot of prayer and asking for help in the midst of my day of all the things I do. And I then when I would see her, I pull on her. I talk about this a lot in these podcasts. I pull on her energetically because I'm so scared of losing her. And I'm so scared that I'm doing it wrong. That I'm constantly needing her reassurance, and I'm always trying to get her to tell me stuff. I'm always like, "Who are you texting? What's going on? You know, what happened last night? How was last night?" I'm always asking all these questions all the time, and she's like, "Mom, cut it out! You're so needy." She'll like that to me all the time. She'll be like, "Oh, like the other day, she told me, don't ask me that. It's so invasive. Forget what I was asking." I said, "Oh, I thought you really wanted me to know that." And she goes, "I also want you to know that." And one time I said to her, "I feel like you're not processing anything with me." And she goes, "I'm not processing with myself." And I was like, "Okay, so she's so smart. She's so brilliant." Anyway, yesterday I was pulling on her all day and praying and pulling. And like you talked about, Kara, just like I would be like, okay, I'm going in there. I'm not going to pull. And then I go to pull. You know, it's like a compulsion to pull on her. It's like it just takes my body over. I just got this message like, you have to let her go. You've got to let her go. It's going to make me cry. Oh, I just don't want to. It's so hard. But I felt such relief go through my whole body letting her go. I was like, I'm going to let her go. I felt this relief from head to toe. Like, I'm going to change this belief. There's a belief that I have to know what's going on at all times to keep her safe. I'm going to let that belief go. you know? And I started letting it go, and all this light came in. I felt so relieved. And then very shortly after, she wants to come hang out with me. Like, spent the whole night connecting after that. But my pull is so gross. She must be like, get the F away from me, you know? Just, we were connected for the night. She came and cuddled with me. We wrestled. She, you know, we chatted. We sang songs. I mean, it's just like the best. And now, you know, just because I decided that doesn't mean now I'm enlightened. I'm going to let my kid go forever. You know, letting go doesn't mean I'm not there with her. It doesn't mean I'm not ready when she needs me. It means I'm going to start trusting her choices and trust her process, even if it's that she's not going to tell me things.
Yeah.
That even her not telling me things is part of her process.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one.
And I'm going to have to keep reminding myself. It's like a new, I'm going to have to be like, oh, remember, you trust her. Remember, you trust her process. I'm going to have to reprogram my brain. And this is a spiritual process, which is why I'm telling you this story, because this is a spiritual process. I have to be willing to get much deeper than my belief systems to some kind of a truth. And I don't know how people do that. I have my way of doing it, and it's changing, you know, right now. I'm doing a lot more spiritual practice since the election here. I have to practice all the time now in order not to plummet into complete depression. And so I'm in deep practice, and that's a spiritual process, you know, letting go of control. I think that's the essence of it. Letting go of control. And that has to do with my belief systems about her and myself and the world. And
you said go beneath your belief systems to a deeper truth. What does that mean exactly?
Well, the thing you were talking about, Warren, seeing the essence of my child and my essence. That's the deeper truth.
Right. You know, I talk about in the parenting group. I'm starting a parenting support group, by the way. I'm calling it a parenting empowerment group. My wife said, it's not a support group, Vic. You're not supporting, you're empowering. I was like, okay, parenting empowering group. And I'm going to be going live once a week as part of that group. And I do meditations. And one of them is about something I mentioned this earlier, called the changing self and the unchanging self. And the changing self is my personality and my thoughts and my opinions and my experiences and my layers and all the stuff that is me as my personality. The unchanging self is my base awareness, my base consciousness. It's the same, even though everything about me is different, it's the same essential me looking out my eyes now at 56, almost 56, than it was when I was 3. It's the same me. And that me-ness that's the same with everything else being different is the unchanging self. And I, from the beginning, tried to recognize that unchanging self and the changing self in my kid. And so we had multiple relationships, right? We had a relationship of unchanging self to unchanging self, and the relationship of changing self to changing self, and also the relationship of unchanging self to changing self going both ways. So that when either of our changing self was in chaos, the other person's unchanging self could hold space for them. And when our two unchanging selves, that base awareness, that infinite sense of our connection, is when we're relating that way, it's an ageless connection. I often say our relationship is ageless. You know, she laughingly calls me old man sometimes, because it's her way of acknowledging that our relationship has always been ageless. And ageless meaning the fact that I was 28 years older than her. I didn't use that to make me in any way above her. And I always treated her with like full respect. Respect's not even a good enough word for me. You know, it's like, it's reverence. I think reverence is a good word. But it's not a reverence that's got a putting her on a pedestal and separating, because reverence can also be separation, right? It's a reverence that brings us close, and it inspires her to see the reverence of her for herself as well. And I love that ageless relationship, and I think that, you know, part of me, because I'm still going through the letting go. I mean, I'm going through it at a different stage, right? She's My kid is married. Ah, she's married. And her partner have such a deep relationship. You know, when we the wedding was just 2 weeks ago, and one of the, she ta started talking about how in her speech, talking about how meeting her partner, how she made her, she like helped her to think in a different way and understand herself in a different way and open her mind in a different way. And part of me is like, but what about me? But I'm overflowing with gratitude that she has found someone like that, you know, that really the two of them really support each other. And so much of my early parenting was focused on wanting to make sure that she didn't accept a partner that was going to treat her poorly in any way or not recognize that same infinitude in her, and have that mutual connection. From the beginning, recognizing that the relationship of unchanging self to unchanging self was a big part of my releasing control over her path. I used to say, you mentioned trust the process, right? And I have three. I say trust the path, trust their path, trust their process, trust their wisdom. And all three are important. The path, because our paths have so many peaks and valleys, right? And they're winding all over the place. There's like that picture you see on Facebook, whatever it says. It says like expect go from where you are now to your goal, and expectation is like a straight line. But then the reality is like there's ups and downs, and there's like demons coming after you, and there's like cacti and snakes trying to bite your ankles. And it's rarely ever do we get a straight line from where we are to where we're going to go. And so trusting her path means when she's in pain and when she's struggling, do I trust that as part of her life path? Can I see the expanse of her life in this moment? She's two, but can I see this moment fitting into the expanse of her life for her whole life? It was the only thing that kept me, it was that kind of perspective that kept me going. Otherwise, I would be so consumed with the pain of it all, with my mistakes and with her pain. And I just wasn't, I knew I wouldn't be able to be present with her that way. So really allowing her to be in pain, which is different than authoritative parents saying, well, your kids are, it's okay if your kids are in pain, but they're talking about the pain they cause. And that's okay to cause when I call it avoidable pain versus unavoidable pain, right? We have avoidable pain. If there's avoidable pain, I'm on it. But if it's the unavoidable pain, I honor it. Ooh, I like that. If it's avoidable pain, I'm on it. If
Oh.
it's unavoidable pain, I honor it.
Oh, you got to write that down. That's such a good
Yeah,
one.
yeah. And so because of that, she's not afraid to share her pain with me because she knows I'm not going to try and rescue her from it. Unless I can. Right? But I'm not going to try and rescue her from it because of my discomfort. That's the point. I'm not going to try and rescue, which is, I think, ties into what you were talking about, Ruthia, about the letting go of her needing you, right? In the same way that she has in the past.
Wow. Every time we talk about it, it hurts so much.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm gonna die. I really feel like I'm gonna die.
yeah.
Can't believe that the universe asks us to attach and
Yeah.
then let go. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, attach with everything you've got, and then you have to let go. Oh my God, really, I don't even know if I can do it. Literally don't know if I can do it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I'm kind of spiritual bypassing when I say this, so let me say I admit that in front up front. But the thing about it is, going through that pain, you actually end up with a much deeper lifelong connection than the other way, where you don't have to go through that pain and the separation happens and your kids are gone. You know, we're by letting them go in the way that we're doing it, we're holding on to them in a deeper way than most parents ever have a chance to experience with their kids. I mean, I'm living that right now with my kid, you know. The vulnerability that she has with me, the trust that she has with me, the way that she, I mean, the other day we did a half hour drive. I drove her home from work. And I said, I really enjoyed our time together. And she said, yeah, Dad, it was so healing for me. Just spending a half hour together.
Oh, I'm gonna cry. I can't.
Yeah, she lets my love in so, I'm gonna cry. She lets my love in so unreservedly. She lets my support and my unchanging self in. And support has such care from my changing self, you know, such care for it. Because of that deep relationship. And so, yeah, I always say I'm covered in scars, but it's worth it because of where we are, you know. So
I am a mess here.
What's happening for you now, Kara?
Oh man, it's just so true what you said. Like that invisible umbilical cord is like they're miles and billions of miles away, but with this path, they always come back. And I work with families every day who the parents just really cannot be what the kid needs. Like they're just begging them and begging them and asking and trying and trying, and they're using different language and they're calling in therapists and they're getting the parents to get therapy and we do family sessions and like, oh, it's so sad, you know? But for your kid to say at like, you know, at this age, like at our age, you know, your kid's my age. Like
Right,
I have
right,
a kid
right.
already, but we're like the same age. Like I get that so deeply. As somebody who's that age and also works with families and is also a parent, for her to say, like, I really enjoy our time together, it heals me. Oh, I can't. Like, that's just gonna send me into like a blubbering puddle.
Yeah.
Cause it's just multi-layered. Like that has so much depth to it.
We're all in different phases. That's why it was such a good trio here.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, totally.
My daughter's almost 13.
But what's cool about us is I think we all really identify with the different places that we've been. I mean, you're talking about like the change. What was it, Vivek? The changing and the unchanging selves.
That's right.
Like, I think about the, you know, IFS kind of approach, the internal family systems of parts. Like, I have all these different parts to me who I identify with and I've gotten to know really well. And like, I think about myself at 13. Like, her and I have a really close relationship. And like I think for those of us on this path to like really cultivate a spiritual process, like an internal process, you have to get to know your past selves because they're still part of you. So like looking at your kid as a 2-year-old, as a 13-year-old, as a 27-year-old, like there has to be a way to connect with that part of yourself.
Well, that's what makes parenting so painful for most people, is they don't have a way to do that.
Yeah. Or they
That's
don't want to because it brings up so
so
much.
painful. Yeah, they don't know how, and it's excruciating. I mean, a lot of it is very unconscious. The way we protect ourselves is very unconscious.
Yeah.
So in my childhood, my parents were not okay with me having feelings at all, except happy. Didn't get angry. And if I was sad, they would talk me out of it. And if I was mad, I'd get punished. And if I was happy, made them very happy. Conditioned me to have a completely fake personality, which I believed myself for a long time. I was like the happiest, successful, popular, like very kind, very, I was just like, you know, Miss Well Behaved. And so I am noticing that when Tori, my daughter, is in pain, it's very hard for me. I mean, I know it's hard true for everyone, but I do try to fix it and I do obsess about it and I do blame myself about it. So that's the thing. That's the thing. It goes straight to, she's in this much pain. I must have done something wrong. Like, I'm really seeing that. It's very deep. And I just know that that's what parents go through. I know it looks like they're judging their children, and they are judging their children, but I think they go, oh, my kid, blah, blah, blah. I'm such an asshole. I fucked up. If I was good enough, my kid would clean up. My kid wouldn't talk to me that way. My kid would, whatever, you know, like if I had done it right, my kid would be successful like all the other kids who want to take piano lessons. Why doesn't my kid want to do a talent? All the other kids do a talent, you know, like all that stuff. And it really, it's deep self-judgment.
But also, that's what a lot of the parent coaches and parent programs are selling. I just wanted to say
What are they selling?
that, you know, you got to fix your kid by being better, by following a program, by following a structure, by being more consistent, by having more control, by doing following our
Oh.
programs. Like you can, you know, that's the
Get
messaging.
your kid to perform better if you perform better. But see, that doesn't work. So why do all those programs like make $1 million? Like, it doesn't work. You can't force your child to be somebody. Then I guess my parents did it with me.
Yeah, it kind of works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it
Works.
kind of works. I mean, coercion is so popular because it kind of works.
It works in short terms. Like it works in, yeah, it does. It works in certain ways.
It works until we redefine what work means, right? Works
Yeah.
means it achieves a goal or it achieves an aim, and therefore it worked. When we start to redefine what our goals are, what our aims are, then we realize how profoundly it doesn't work. And it actually it is creating an effect, but it's far, far, far away from the effect that we want. We want our kids to know themselves deeply, to love themselves deeply, to have deep relationship with their own consciousness, with their own bodies, with their emotions, with understanding the sense of their shared humanity in the world, and to honor their humanity, to have a relationship with their intuition, right, and their universal wisdom inside of them, right? To have a sense of unconditional acceptance for themselves, and deeply humanizing themselves, knowing that when we deeply humanize ourselves, it's so hard to dehumanize others. All
Right.
the dehumanization that we see going on in the world, all the misogyny and the racism and the homophobia and the transphobia and the classism and all the stuff that we see that's so painful, and the sexism, all genderism, and we see all of this oppression happening. So much of it is because of our disconnection from our loving core, from the center of who we are, from our shared humanity. And all the we've been dehumanized so much that it just that's just how you that's just how that's just how it is. That's how we treat people. That's what life is about. That's what humanity is about. And if we want to rewire that, if we want to rewire that old way of being, then it doesn't work. Coercion doesn't work for that, right? It literally does the opposite of that. And that's why love and kindness and acceptance and connection, these things are and being a sacred, like I talk about being a sacred mirror for our kids, right? Where we reflect back to them their own sacredness and how every moment is sacred, whether it's a traditionally thought of as well-behaved, joyous moment or a traditionally thought of as a problematic, unhappy moment. We see all of it as sacred. And that's why I said trust their path before. And so work does it does coercion work? Yes, coercion does work. If you yell at your kid, they probably are gonna have some kind of there's gonna be some kind of impact, of course. They're gonna do less of this or more of that. And but when we look at things from the surface of behavior and how kids are behaving, and then we see kids as let's say the kids are not children are not a collection of behaviors to be controlled, right? But that's what we're programmed to believe about our kids and about humans. In general, that we're a collection of behaviors to be controlled, not a deep spirit, deep soul, a deep consciousness, that we can have this profound relationship with and to nurture that. So,
Right, and
yeah.
just to sort of like validate that on the other end of my story that I just told, it's like taken me my whole life to heal that fake self that I created, an endless amount of layers of, like that was so thick I couldn't know myself for so, you know, so much work, so much work, so much dismantling to be where I am now, and I'm still doing it every day, every single day. And I don't speak to my parents. So that didn't work. That
Right.
did, their coercion did not make me close to them. So.
Yeah, I hardly spoke to my dad for years and years and years, most of my life. Once I was able to get out, because well, I used to say I was bullied at school and bullied at home. But my mom is different because even though she parented traditionally in a lot of ways and spanking and punishments and stuff, there was a part of her that always knew that was wrong and really tried to fight against it, you know. But like her husband and both sets of parents and everybody that she knew, everything was different from that. But she would still find little ways to rebel against those mindsets, you know. And it was those little efforts that she made, and our relationship is stayed close all those years, you know. And even now, like I'm living with my mom now because she's not well, and she has no one to take care of her. And so I've actually moved in. I've left my home with my wife, and I moved in with my mom, and I'm taking care of her full time, you know. And in a lot of ways, I'm having to do all this self regulation and self and awareness and evaluation and working with my inner child stuff and all my triggers and everything, because it's like I haven't really had to face that stuff since my kid was young, right? And now I'm having to face it all over again because I get frustrated and I'm like, Vivek, do not project that on your 81-year-old mother. You know, she's 60 pounds, poor dear. She's like skin and bones. She's constantly in the hospital. She's the, you know. But when my daughter was born, I told both of my parents, this is how we're going to be doing things. You're either on board or not. And if you're on board, great. You'll be part of our lives. If you're not, then we'll see you, you know, Christmas holidays and birthdays. And that's what my dad chose. And my mom went the opposite way. She's like really, really, really tried to understand. She didn't always understand all the stuff that my wife and I were doing. Because like we literally never told my kid what to do, right? We never told her no. We never told her she was wrong. And it's hard. It was hard for her to understand, but she never argued with it. She always tried to understand. And now, and then we ended up on the, with this really beautiful relationship. And so even like as my mom will probably hear this. I love you, mom. But even as imperfect, more imperfect, right? I was also imperfect, but even more imperfect, even with that, the effort that she put in is what really stuck with me. And that's why I was able to keep my heart open to her, which I couldn't with my dad. I mean, the last couple of years with my dad, I tried to call him once a week because I knew he was going to pass away soon. And I thought, at least let him feel that I love him and there's some connection before he goes. So I wanted to give him that. I don't know if I ever really felt it. I can say I didn't ever really feel it. It was something I did for him. And I think he really believed it. And I think it really made a difference in his last couple of years. That's the impression I have. And I feel good about that, actually, for having done that. And I mean, honestly, sometimes not being honest and not being authentic is okay, because I think it really helped my dad. And there was no point in, at that point, I knew there was no point in my daughter was grown up. I didn't really have to protect her from him anymore. And like that. And I feel good about that. But with my mom, talking about letting go, every time I go into her room, I'm like, is she breathing? You know? And at some point she's not going to be breathing, you know? I mean, my sister passed away 6 months ago. And I'm the one who found her. I was actually coming over to pick her up and take her to the hospital. And I, when I got here, and we had just talked like an hour and a half before that or something. And when I got here, she was already gone. And I ended up, because of logistics, I ended up sitting with her for like 8 hours, with her body for 8 hours before they finally came and picked it up, took it away. And sitting with her, knowing her incredibly bright and powerful personality, and who she was, wasn't there in the room with me. Oh, like the, but the body was still there. That the, like I don't know, is in some way it like it deepened my awareness of the consciousness that we are. You know, we arise out of the earth somehow through our parent with the uterus's body, and made up of earth, made up of electrons, nothing else. And somehow there's this personality there. Somehow there's this joy and this pain there, and the connection that we shared. I was 3 years older. She called me her baby brother, and really feeling what she was and what she wasn't. And then what am I and what am I not? And what is my kid and what is my kid not? And what is the body and what is the consciousness in the body? Like these are questions I will probably spend my life trying to answer. Thank goodness. And thank goodness that I'm trying to answer them is what I mean, you know, that it means it's meaningful to me to, it's meaningful to me to seek after those answers and to be in communion with people who are seeking after those answers. What is love? What is knowledge? What is compassion? And fundamentally, who am I? Who are we? You know, and these deep questions guided my parenting and my daughter and I from the very beginning, we were exploring those questions together, you know. And still are. And I think that's a beautiful and such a deep, beautiful foundation for enduring relationship with our children. Much better than trying to control their behavior for 18 years, you know. And of course behavior happens, of course life happens. You still have to deal with life and school and money and job and health and relationships and capitalism and all this stuff. But inside of that, how we are with our kids in this deep human way makes such a big difference. And yeah, I feel really fortunate. I have to say, I feel really fortunate to have had those awarenesses and insights and epiphanies back then, and the inner drive to trust them and to follow them, even when everyone around me was telling me that my was going to basically destroy the world. Even today, I saw the comment, oh, this peaceful parenting stuff, kids come to school and they're so disrespectful. I'm telling you, friends, it's not the kids that are being treated with profound respect that are going in there being disrespectful, you know. And unless the teacher deserves it, because the teacher's just a human. They're a human, right? If you're an authoritarian disciplinarian teacher, you're not going to get a lot of respect from the other humans in your class, regardless of what age they are. You know, you're going to lose that pretty quick. But if you connect with them in a deep way and really honor who they are, you know, it's like that time when I was doing a talk with a group of middle school kids. And these were kids from like really rough areas of the city, because I was volunteering at a youth empowerment conference. And I had this, and they were all talking, and the teachers were trying to shush them up. And I told the teachers, just leave the kids, let me deal with it. And the kids were all talking, and I just stood there at the front of the class for a few minutes, letting them talk. And then at some point, there was a little lull in the conversation. And I said, hey, everybody, I'm here to give you a presentation, and this is really important stuff that I have to share with you. And then I got a little serious for a moment. I went, and if you're talking while I'm talking, that's okay, because who am I? I'm not more important than you, and what I have to say is not important, more important than you. And if you have something to say, say it. If you want to talk to your partner, you want to talk to the person next to you, say whatever you have to say. And then if you're okay with it, give me your attention back again. And immediately, the biggest so-called troublemaker in the class turned to his teacher at the back and said, "Hey, miss, can this guy come teach at our school?" And those kids gave me so much attention. They gave me so much of their respect, you know, and I never asked for their respect. I never asked them to be quiet, not once. And like last summer, I gave a workshop called A Revolution in Parenting, and it was at a camp, a family camp, and there were all these kids there, and everybody crowded into this tent where I gave the workshop, and there was like 5 12-year-olds and a bunch of 10-year-olds and like 5 and 3 and 2-year-olds. And I expected, when I saw all these kids in there, I expected all these kids are going to be running around making noise. And I told the parents right from the beginning, please do not shush your kids. Do not make them be silent. If they want to run around, let them run around. They are the priority. That's the whole point of the whole thing. Let them do it. But those kids, I still am amazed by this experience. Those kids sat for 2.5 hours and listened to me. And I never asked them to. And I explicitly told the parents not to, but they sat. Even the 2-year-olds sat, because I was right from the beginning, I was saying kids deserve respect, and we shouldn't tell them what to do, and we have to honor everything that they want. And don't tell them. And I started off that way, really, really on a real high note. And they were like, "What?" You know. And they sat and they listened to me for all that time. I still, to me, I'm still amazed by that, you know. But if I had even a little bit been authoritative, even a little bit, I would have lost them, you know. So that connection, that deep connection that we have with our, that's why I say love is more logical and kindness is more practical. Even though it doesn't seem that way at first, this approach has so much efficacy in it for actually working with other humans, regardless of their age, and building real community with each other and having real safe and connected and deeply moving, evolving relationships, because we're always evolving and learning together. This approach is, I believe, is the one that's the most effective for creating that.
Yeah, and I just want to say for anyone who's listening who's like, but what is it? You know, there's so many podcasts I mean, there's so many episodes on our podcast that really breaks it down what it is and what it looks like and examples of it and different areas and different sticking points and chaos and screen time and boundaries and all of that. This is more like the bigger picture that we're talking.
And I also have 200 video over 200 videos on my YouTube channel. It's a brilliant resource, Meaningful Ideas on YouTube, and some are like short, like 2 3 4 minute videos, and some are full hour 2 hour workshops. So definitely worthwhile going through all of that.
Vivek's videos are for me are like chiropractic adjustments to my brain when I'm lost. I'm like, what am I doing? Where am I? I'm crazy. No one gets me. I'm alone. I go listen to him. Everything gets reorganized. I'm like, okay, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, I
I
actually
appreciate that.
re-listened to that podcast with you, Vivek. On what is the title of it? It's like episode, it's season one, episode three. It's like, what's wrong with coercion? And it's like everything you say in that just really reminds you of like why we're doing this, and grounds you in like the knowing that you can, because like it's so important to understand for me sometimes, like, well, what's so wrong with like trying to get my kid to be obedient, you know? And I'll go listen to that episode and I'm like, that's what's fucking up. Like, that's what's wrong, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Feel like I could still keep talking because there's a whole other conversation too. Like, we talked about it a little bit, but like, what's wrong with behaviorism? Like, that's where we could go from there, you know? Like, what you were just saying, like, there's no room for behaviorism in any of that, you know? Like, even in that little text image with the kids sitting there listening to you, I mean, you cannot use behaviorism, you can't use any of those strategies to engage with kids in the way that you were able to.
Right. Well, you would lose connection.
It'd be over.
Yeah.
And
That's a
I
thing.
used to.
Sorry, I was going to say that's the thing about when my daughter's pushing me away. Sometimes she's pushing me away because she just needs to do her own thing. And sometimes she's pushing me away because she's giving me the feedback that I'm in a good place, letting me know I'm pulling on her or I'm approaching her with an agenda or like she, you know, and she's constantly giving me the feedback, which is a gift. It's a gift.
That's why you need to trust their process, which you can't do when you're using behaviorism as your primary lens, because you're coming from a position of authority that you know better, and that training them into where your goals are for them is has to be the
And
end
it's all
result, but
right
you're
and
doing it
wrong.
wrong.
Yeah, it's all right and wrong. I was going to say, it's like this behavior is right, this behavior is wrong.
That's why no wrongness is one of the founding principles of this path, right?
Just all links. It's like the Fibonacci sequence or something. It's like it just all builds on itself.
No wrongness is that understanding that everything that happens in life is part of our process, and we can learn from it and grow from it together and hold it together. And there's so much trust that kids build in our co-guidance when we approach things that way. Even just a little bit of wrongness, a little bit of wrongness. Kids are so picks up on it so much. You know, even if they don't say it out loud, they put every time that little bit of wrongness comes, they put a little barrier. And I'm obsessive about rooting out wrongness. I call it, I turn my shame radar up to 11. Which is like a joke about guitar amplifiers that only go up to 10, but mine goes up to 11. And I'm so obsessive about it. And I'm even now I still learn about it. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, that was wrongness, you know? So if your kid comes to you and tells you, for example, I yelled at this kid because I didn't like their hat, for example. I didn't like their hat. I thought it was a stupid hat, and I told him it was a stupid hat. How can you have no wrongness about that? That's hard because it's wrong. It's bullying. We don't want. My question always is, if I do actually want that kid to see that behavior in a different light, wrongness is not going to do that. It's not. You know, I mean, not wrongness is not only a no wrongness is not only a kind thing, which it is, but it's also extremely effective in helping us achieve our goals, right? For me, I'm like, oh, was the hat stupid? Tell me about that. It sounds like that was a real, you know, like you were really expressing yourself there. I'm glad you felt good about expressing yourself. Tell me about that. What was that like for you? With no wrongness, not like, well, what was that like for you? I keep that out of my voice. You know, I really want the kid to feel like, oh yeah, because every time when kids process without the wrongness, they find their way back to their own humanity. And this is the beautiful process that we can help kids with, you know. Because the world is going to pull them away from that. Even if we don't, the world is going to pull them away from that over and over. Their peers and other adults and the media and everything, right? And all the systems they have to engage with. But we can be their constant source of bringing them back to their humanity, bringing them back to their source, bringing them back to love and compassion and connection. And doing that over and over and over again for a couple of decades, it has a real impact. You know, I really appreciate the two of you so much. You know, I've been doing this for, well, now 27 years, 27 and a half. And it's ever since my kid was young, people have told me how wrong this whole approach is, you know. And even to this day, even on gentle parenting pages, authoritative parenting, which has more control and coercion in it, is still so popular. And I keep getting told I'm off my rocker for doing things this way. And when I you know, when I engage with the two of you, I just feel so seen and so supported. And I feel like the three of us are always learning together and growing together, and it really means a lot to me. So I really feel blessed to have you both in my life.
Me too. And I can't believe we haven't met and had a party together. It's disgraceful.
We're going to do it very soon. Folks, please follow me on all the social media spaces at Meaningful Ideas. Meaningful Ideas on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok. And also Blue Sky, and which is the new one, and also Threads. I'm Meaningful Ideas everywhere. As soon as a new platform comes out, I go take Meaningful Ideas, the name. Even if I don't go on there, I just grab it everywhere.
Oh,
And
great.
meaningfulideas.com is where I have my courses. Right now I have one free course called Guiding Without Controlling, which is life-changing. And I have a paid course called Recovering from a Parenting Mistake with Maximum Change and Minimum Shame. And not no shame, because that's really hard, but minimum shame. And also I have two more coming up that I'm going to be releasing very soon. One on collaborative limits, which are very different from coercive limits, because collaborative limits, the kids really enjoy it, which is like unheard of. And the other one is on supporting your children's emotional wellness. Both of those are workshops I recently did, and I'm going to be releasing them as courses very soon. And so I'd love to see you over at meaningfulideas.com. And that's it. Thank you so much.
If someone wants to watch your videos, they should go to YouTube. Like, where's like
YouTube is the
they're,
best place.
okay.
Yeah. And my articles are mostly on Facebook.
Okay.
And my blog, I actually wrote a blog. I don't promote the blog very often because I wrote the blog in 2015. In 2015, I wrote every day for a year. So there's just about 400 articles on this blog. Is that
That's where I
meaningful?
found you. That's where I
Is
found you first.
it?
But before I met Rithia, like before I found Rithia on TikTok, I found you. Because I was reading Ross Green and collaborative stuff. I was all into collaborative parenting, blah, 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 also as a teacher. And I found you and your blog. And that's why I made that joke on that episode with Vietz. I was like, or you could read something from a Vietz blog from 2005. Because it was
Oh my
like forever ago. And it
God.
was like in the little corner of the internet. And I was like a reader. Isn't that
I had
funny?
no idea.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's actually at meaningfulideas.ca, because right now I haven't figured out how to put my blog on meaningfulideas.com because I did a whole switcheroo thing. But you can see all the articles at meaningfulideas.ca. One parent just reached out to me recently saying they spent a year reading all the articles on that thing. And what were you left with as your general impression after reading all of those blog posts? And she said that I am not just a wave, I am the whole ocean, and I need to be kind and compassionate to myself.
Wow. No,
And I was like,
they are profound pieces of material. And I mean, I was already on the page and I found that, and it was the language that I was like trying to, I had all this feeling about it. And I saw your work and I was like, oh, he already wrote it. He's already there. It was
amazing,
so
amazing.
amazing. Yeah. This has been Your Kids Don't Suck. You can find me, Kara Tedstone, at www.karatedstonetherapy.com. And on Instagram at Kara Tedstone Therapy. On my website, you'll find links to recommended readings and a link to my Reparenting with Mindfulness workbook, available now on Amazon.
You can find me, Rithia Lee, at www.rithia.com. That's RYTHEA.com. There you'll find published books, articles, and music and parenting videos. Also, I'm on TikTok at Rithia Lee. On Instagram at Rithia Lee. You can book parent mentoring sessions with me through my website. And also, I have an Advice from a Loving Bitch YouTube show that helps people heal self-hatred, and that's rithia.com/advice. It is important and essential to put our voices, Rithia and Kara, in a context. We are two white, cisgendered, straight, middle-class women living with financial and societal privilege. Because of this, our perspectives are limited and do not reflect the realities of all of our listeners. This podcast will feature guests with expertise around conscious parenting who differ in race, class, abilities, sexual orientation, and histories from us. to broaden the conversation and reflect the lives of as many people as possible. 25% of the proceeds of this podcast will go to creators of color who have been mentors and influences on our work and in our growth as parents.
If you like our show, please subscribe and stay tuned for more conscious parenting advice and insights. And check out our link tree at linktr.ee/yourkidsdontsuck to donate and connect with us.